T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
He's New England's preeminent source on everything Patriots.
They don't have a house in Connecticut.
I have been told the same thing Curran has been told.
The one and only Tom E. Curran. Tom Curran joining us.
I bend over to Tommy Curran.
Tom Curran joining us from NBC Sports Boston.
It's time for Tuesday with Tom.
I'm surprised about Tom E. Curran.
So why is he so damn special that we have to call him Tom E. Curran?
Curran. On Dale and Keith.
They don't have a house in Connecticut.
Keep on laughing.
Hour number 3, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI, every Tuesday at noon. We connect up with Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston. He joins us on the Harbor One Hotline. Good afternoon, Tom.
Dale, how are you? What's up, Rich?
How you doing, Tom?
You know, I'm thinking to myself, this is fun, and there is absolutely no shortage of post-Brady storylines to plumb. We might end up doing this every Tuesday right through.
I think so. I think this is kind of it.
You know, I think let's add the newest tidbit here, and we'll get to a lot of different NFL things in the next few minutes. According to Gary Myers, the NFL plans to play a full 16-game season with the possibility of a delayed start to the season. Are you hearing that as well?
That's the first report I've seen on that. I know that Arthur Blank had intimated, and he strictly couched it as speculation that they would be doing that, but certainly doesn't surprise me. I think that there are a lot of people who are sitting in home offices and on couches and sitting on Zoom, you know, interview events or conferences and saying what they hope will happen. But I think that's what people have right now, is a lot of different time and a lot of contingency plans. So I'm not surprised that they hope to do that, but they will run into some things too, as we could easily unfold the different things that would be there. For instance, what about your scheduling? What about the next year's draft? What about free agency in 2021? All of those things will be impacted, not to mention your Super Bowl, which, you know, again, we're less than a year out from Tampa Bay hosting a Super Bowl. Can you move that whole friggin' thing? A lot going on.
So Bucks GM Jason Light spoke the other day, and a couple of things that he talked about, and we'd sort of heard rumblings of this, but I'm curious your take on a couple of different things. One, that really, Tom Brady sold himself to the Bucks more than the Bucks sold themselves to Tom Brady. And then the other part was, and maybe they're just saying this because they had him, or maybe not, I know you feel a similar way, that they thought that Brady's arm strength is just as good as it's ever been after going through all of last season's film.
Yeah, I had a few different thoughts on this, and I'm not sure if they're going to dovetail neatly with other people's. I thought that, for instance, Brady's going in there onto that phone call, and he already understands long prior, I'm sure, by back channel conversations about the Bucks' interest. And he understands also that there's a situation where he's already pre-sold to them. Arians has already made it clear. So to me, that was more of him showing how enthused he was about joining them, if Jason Light wants to frame it that way. I don't think that the Bucks were wavering. I think it's more him trying to make the point that this guy really wants to be here. So to me, that underscores that all the things we talked about that we attributed to Brady were legitimate, i.e. he didn't really care about the money. He wanted to go someplace with a quote-unquote fun guy, Arians, who is the polar opposite of Bill Belichick. And, you know, his record bears out another conversation as to whether that's positive or not. He wanted to go someplace where there were really good players, because he was disgruntled with the level of players that were surrounding him in 2019. So those two boxes were checked. To me, Tampa Bay, and I talked about it a little bit at the end of January, and you know, then Tennessee jumped up and as more of a front runner. But to me, Tampa Bay was always the best football place for him. And in the end, it was about football. It wasn't about TB12 empires or Giselle being comfortable or being in a place to do a production company. It was about the fun, and it was about the football. And he made the decision, to me, seemingly based on those things. What do you guys think about
that?
Well,
given that, because we asked this question earlier, if the Patriots had duplicated the offer from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not that they were ever going to, but if they had, if they had said, Tom, we'll give you the exact same thing, would he have stayed here?
Last August, yes.
No, yeah. I'm talking about
now. That's what I said. Yeah, March, I said the same thing.
No, last August, yes. This March, no.
Damage was done, yeah. Because
I saw this movie. It was like, I saw this movie before, guys. Mm-hmm. This where you say we're going to do this, and we're going to get this guy and that guy and Jared Cook and Humphreys and Cole Beasley, and I've seen this movie, and it doesn't happen. And then I'm out there trying to throw to a kid from Bemidji State. God bless him.
So my takeaway, Tom, and I get your point about how when Brady picks up the phone, he already knows that they're interested, and he's showing his enthusiasm. But my kind of takeaway was he was prepared to leave the Patriots, didn't want to return to the Patriots at this point, part because he got kind of pushed out, in my opinion. But he also realized that, man, I'm not sure how many legitimate offers I am really going to get. So
that's a good point,
yeah,
too.
Okay.
That's a good point, too, because, look, okay, well, to me, it looks like I'm not going to San Francisco. I wanted to, and again, there are a lot of people who tell you otherwise. They really, the head coach in particular, tried to figure out a way to get that to happen. Once it became clear that they couldn't and wouldn't, and he gave in, they moved on. Once Brady realized that, it's like, shoo, boy, all right, yeah. So it's Tampa or San Diego. I better make sure that they understand I'm not screwing around here. I'm not waiting to see nine teams step up. I want to be there and let them know.
It'll be an offseason unlike any that any of us can ever remember in the history of the National Football League. And we talked about at least the possibility of a delayed start to the regular season come September. I guess the question is, if you're a new quarterback going to a new organization, Tom's not the only one, you get no opportunity for OTAs. You, in all likelihood, get no opportunity for mini camps or passing camps or anything else. You're probably maybe even going to get a delayed start to training camp. How hard is it going to be to pick things up?
That's a great question, and I think that this is going to be one of those everybody come to Montana moves. I mean, that I would imagine is probably something that he would have on the table for himself and his teammates. You know, make sure, guys, get yourself swabbed. Make sure you're clean. And we're going to go up, and we're going to be in seclusion up there, and we're going to work on some stuff together. You know, you can't have a coach there, but you can, I'm sure, download playbooks or whatever else needs to be done, and you all get together and you bond. It could be a positive. To me, thinking locally on this, I think this is such a blow to the development of Jarrett Stidham. And I think Stidham has great upside, and he couldn't be in a better spot in terms of a quarterback whisperer in the way that Josh McDaniels has fostered young guys. But it's year one to year two. We know it. Every single quarterback from Brady to Garoppolo to Brissett to what will be Jarrett Stidham. It's the most critical time in their development. And that's why it's so beneficial to the Patriots that Phillip Rivers signed in Indianapolis when he did, and that made Brian Hoyer moot, because now you can have at least somebody to ease the transition for Stidham if he's not ready, which I think he would have been more than ready at the beginning of the season. But I think it's going to be really hampered by what's going on. So to me, it's more significant locally than it would be for Tampa and Tom Brady.
Now, is it because, again, the practices and the OTAs and the preseason, all that could be thrown out of whack, do you think it's likely that Hoyer could at least be the starter week one?
Absolutely, I do. Because we don't know how much time they're going to spend in the preseason. Why do you want him? Don't set him out there to fail. Don't put him out there to fail. Yeah. Is Brian Hoyer in week one going to throw for 350? I mean, he could. I mean, that's the interesting thing about last preseason. He looked great in the first preseason game, which is the least serious in some ways, along with the fourth. But he looked really, really good. He's still got plenty of arm. He's smarter than Stidham will be, obviously, in terms of where to go with the ball. And I could see run the ball, play defense, let Brian take care of business, and Jarrett, don't worry about it. We still love you. But don't send him out there to fail on what could conceivably be a primetime game and get his head caved in.
Speaking of quarterbacks, Armando Salguero reported earlier today that the Dolphins are going to make a real play with Cincinnati to acquire the first overall pick in the draft. The obvious assumption here by Salguero is that they want Joe Burrow to be the quarterback for the Dolphins. I don't know if Cincinnati would do it or not, but what would that move do for the Dolphins in the AFC East?
I think, and I'm going to talk to Armando and Manish and Matthew Fairburn from Buffalo later on a podcast, because I really want to get a vibe for what the AFC East landscape looks like. But every single one of these teams has reason to feel really enthused about where things are heading for them. Even the Jets, because I think that Darnold, despite the Ghosts game, had a pretty good close to the season. Obviously, Miami had a terrific close to the season, and they've added so many players, so their culture is going to be improving. And the Bills are in a great spot, except for the ridiculousness that the quarterback obviously is capable of. So, to me, it's going to change things significantly if they can get him. Now, the interesting thing is, I would have figured that Ryan Fitzpatrick already played for the Bengals. That seems like a place he would have played. Has he played there?
Yeah, I think so.
Doesn't that seem like a place he would have played?
Yeah, he has. Fitzpatrick's been there. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that way I didn't blank on that. Hey, you know, Rich, you asked me, too, about Brady's arm strength
and the
ability to throw downfield, and I never answered that. I think it's interesting. If you look at the Tennessee game, and I watched that when they replayed it a couple weeks ago, he made a lot of really strong throws. This is in, you know, mid-January, and there was a throw just before halftime because they worked to get themselves in a position to try and score that time, and they hadn't earlier in the end of the season. He threw it 65, 70 yards in the air into the middle of the end zone from his own 35. So, now he threw like a friggin' javelin. You're not going to be one to do that.
Right.
But how often do you call upon all of it? You know, I mean, if you're a fastball pitcher, if you're a pitcher, you're not going to throw 98 all the time, even if you can. And I don't think that Brady gets into a position where he has to throw with all that velocity all the time. I thought his pocket mobility, the only thing I saw for slippage, guys, was a lack of trust in his offensive line that caused jumpiness and too many throwaways. Where he's like, this isn't going to work. This is doomed. Boom, gone.
Yeah.
So I saw jumpiness. What about you guys?
Some of the decision-making, I thought, and again, could be the receivers, could be the offensive line, but some of like the picks in the end zone and certain things like that seemed, not that he'd never done it before, but it felt like last season you saw a little bit more of it.
I thought he had a lot of throwaways, as you said. But, Tom, I remember commenting with Rich throughout the course of the season, I've never seen Brady miss as many throws as I saw him miss last year.
There were bad misses. There were low misses. There were high misses. And I thought, and again, obviously I'm in the bag for the guy, and I can probably say that.
It's a good guy to be in the bag for, though, Tom.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like some
one.
Bum, you know. It's pretty good.
You know, like the throw at the goal line in Cincinnati to Sony Michel that almost hit him in the shins. Not great.
Right.
You know, some of the misfires to Philip Dorsett and on the sidelines when he was high a couple of times. And I thought that was kind of as the season went along, accuracy waned because of he just didn't know what he was going to be looking at after the snap in terms of where guys were going to be and how much separation they get. But again, I am a full-on apologist.
Is there anything left in free agency for the Patriots to do? Or at this point, is it, let's get to the draft, maybe there's some trades and whatever at that point. But because there's still some names out there, you know, not just the quarterbacks and Winston and Newton, which I know a lot of people said that's not happening. But there's still plenty of other players, you know, not the A players, but some of the other guys that they can get. Is there anything going on with them?
They have to get fixed with the salary cap. And to me, I think that the quickest way to do that, if they saw something out there, would be to renegotiate with Joe Tooney. You take his 14.8, you drop it down pretty quickly to sub $5 million in salary and guarantees for 2020, and you saved yourself $10 million. But I don't know if anything really announces itself as being a move that they need to or want to make. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney would be obviously a terrific add as a pass rusher and somebody who can play versatilely up and down the line. Would he want to come here? Would the Patriots want to do a $90 million contract? I freaking doubt it because I'm sure that's what he's looking for. So this to me, and I've said this a couple times now, and I really think that Bill Belichick is taking his medicine. And he's just going to say, okay, you know what? We're as smart as any team has ever been in terms of managing games, institutional knowledge. We understand how to win football games. We understand how not to lose them. This is kind of what we're going with. We're gonna take our medicine this year financially, and we're going to figure out who the guys we want. Because if it was a crappy free agent class at some of the positions in need. So, but they cannot fail in the draft as badly as they have in the last 5 years. Because I think, as I said to you guys last week, when you look at since 2015, there are only two players on their roster that I would venture to say another team would covet. That's Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney. Wow. You could maybe make the argument for Stidham and for Isaiah Wynn. But that's four players out of however many. Maybe you can make the argument for Chase Winovich, but you can't say that any of those players are ones that teams would say, if I could get him now, he would be starting here. Isn't that arresting to think that?
Yeah, it's incredible.
They don't have anybody who could start someplace else.
Isn't it also safe to say that what we consider to be the smartest kids in the room, Patriots Brain Trust, mismanaged the salary cap here?
I wouldn't go there because I think that they tried to do their best to make the team a winner. But when you point out, you know, eventually it was going to come due when the Brady stuff, if they had re-signed Brady. Yeah, they mismanaged it by not doing Brady sooner when you could have, to me, Dale. And now you're carrying $13.5 million. If you tried, you know, the 25 guaranteed last year, 25 guaranteed this year, I don't know. But things like the Antonio, so I'm not positive. You could be right on the Brady aspect of it. But then there's other planning things that have a domino effect, i.e. not doing a good enough job at the wide receiver position so that you have to bring in Antonio Brown and you spend $9 million worth of cap space on him over the course of two seasons, another $5 million there. It's all interlinked. So I think that that's why the Patriots are like, you know what, enough shopping. Let's just figure it out with the guys we have in the room, sign our Adrian Phillipses, sign our, you know, whatever other mid to low level guys, Brandon Copeland's, and we'll take our chances with Bo Allen and we'll ride with those.
Is there a position you like in the first round, or is it just they have so many needs it almost doesn't matter and just, you know, take a guy and hope for the best, or is there a spot that you identify?
It's funny. There's a Patriots draft event we're going to do later this month, or actually the beginning of next month. And it's myself, Reese, Field Yates, and Rob Ninkovich. They asked us to send in needs. I stopped at like five.
It's like everything. It's for the first time ever. They're one of those teams now. Yeah, it's everything.
I would say to me, it's safety. Because you need somebody to replace Patrick Chung. I don't know if Adrian Phillips is able to do that or not. I would think that that's a pretty good addressing. Safety, outside linebacker / defensive end, interior offensive line, wide receiver, and tight end. Tight end actually shooting up the board a little bit more because you can't do it anymore. You can't run around out there with...
So you expect Chung to be gone?
No, I just think you need to have somebody coming up behind him. I mean, Harmon's gone. So have that guy learn behind Chung. I can't imagine Chung would be gone. But 5'9", 205, he's now in his 11th year. He throws himself off a building every week to make plays.
Right.
You got to start preparing for post-Chung life. Mm-hmm. To me!
So as we sit here now, and we gave this number the other day where the over-unders in the NFL were out, and one of the betting books had the Patriots and the Buccaneers and a couple of other teams tied at 9 apiece. If you were sitting here right now betting with Rich Keefe's money, would you take the over or the under?
On the Patriots?
Yep.
I would bury the under.
Yeah. Feels like an under.
You know, based upon how they looked last year, how they did against the best teams in the conference, the fact that they lost to five non-playoff teams the year before, and they just lost the best player of all time in the year before they lost the greatest tight end we've ever seen. So, an arrow not pointing up.
All right. We appreciate the time, as always. It's a weird world we live in.
I didn't mean to be a downer.
Thanks. Jeez.
Well, you know, we're hard-pressed to find many good things lately.
Come on, turn that frown upside down.
Tom, how
what can we talk about?
Tom, how do you like doing the TV stuff from home with the was it Zoom or Skype or whatever?
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
I don't mind it at all. But I tell you, some people who do these things, they have to understand that you have to put the camera eye level. Don't put it down near your chin or your chest because you're looking down.
Good point.
And it feels like I am being
talked down to.
I explained it differently. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Offline.
All right.
Nice.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, then. Goodbye.
Thanks, Tom.
See you, bud. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joining us. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We will give you an opportunity to win an autographed Tom Brady Patriots jersey here in just a couple of minutes. Scott Pioli will join us not long after that, as we continue to kind of celebrate Tom Brady's career this week. 617-779-7937. We get to all of that after we trend.
Ready for more? Dale and Keith on WEEI.
We'll connect up with Scott Pioli, who was part of the management team for the Patriots back when the Patriots originally drafted Brady and saw him develop into, well, we all think the best quarterback who ever lived. And I've talked to Scott about this in the past, and he very freely admits and will admit again, of course they didn't have any idea what they were dealing with. Nobody did.
If I was Scott, I would start pitching a different tune and be like, it was my idea.
I know exactly what
we
were
doing. It was my idea. I was like, Adrian Clem, no, let's take Brady right now. And they were like, no, we don't even know this guy. And I'd be like, it was my idea the whole time, and thankfully they listened to me in the sixth round.
Yeah, and see if anybody buys that,
right? You never know.
By the way, we mentioned earlier, because we're all doing, you know, Brady Week segments, and yesterday Charlie Weiss, former offensive coordinator for the Patriots, was on with OMF, and some people thought he was throwing shade at Jermaine Wiggins, and I don't think he was at all.
Kind of was.
Well, he was just saying if he didn't have him as high as, you know, Rob Gronkowski or Aaron Hernandez or Christian Fourier, but he said on a bad track, man, he was your guy.
Yeah, he basically said he was so slow that he was only good in the snow.
Well, let's hear Charlie,
yeah.
And you tell me if you think he's throwing shade.
Fourth and six, gotta have it. Tight end matched up one-on-one. Give me the best tight ends you've seen here while you've been coaching.
Gronkowski, one.
Of course.
Okay. Yep. Aaron Hernandez, two.
Yep.
And I'm taking Fourier, three. I think Daniel Graham, Ben Watson, had potential to be top flight players.
What if I told you the person that asked me to pose it that way was one Jermaine Wiggins?
Jermaine Wiggins was the best mutter that we had.
What?
If the field was sloppy, he was the best guy we had.
He's going to hate
so
this.
Anytime the field was sloppy, he was the go-to guy. He ran so slow, and his feet never left the ground. You never had to worry about him getting knocked off his feet.
I mean, that seems like a more of a shot at Wiggy than anything else.
Well, seems like some fat
and
shaming.
I love how
I mean, let's be
up,
honest.
Yeah.
When the fact that Wiggy on his list had himself as number one, he sort of deserves it, don't you think?
No, I don't. And I also think it's funny that Weiss is like, Watson and Graham had potential. It's like, yeah, no kidding. They were first-round picks. They were horrible. He's like, they had potential. So he leaves those guys out. And then he's like, Wiggy was only good in the snow. Well, how come when he went to Minnesota, who plays in a dome, his first 2 years in Minnesota, he had 140 catches? Like, what the hell? Maybe you could have used him in more than the mud.
Because he had moss over the top. Wiggy freely admits that.
No, but it's still 140 catches?
Like, Wiggy was still slow in Minnesota. He didn't suddenly pick it up.
But they played in they played indoors. It's not like they played every game in the rain and the slop and everything else. But
yesterday, all these Twitter feeds, all these team Twitter feeds are, you know, posting highlights, content, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And the New York Jets yesterday posted Jermaine Wiggins' first touchdown catch.
How about that?
Vinny Testaverde threw it to him.
Vinny. Not bad.
And they showed Wiggy's first touchdown catch in the NFL.
Wiggy's first year in Minnesota, his catch percentage was 77.2%.
Oh, he said he's got hands.
The guy's got hands, and he's a mutter, according to Charlie Weiss. It is weird, though, that they got rid of him after 2001, isn't it? Like, obviously they were able to win in 2003 and 2004. But for him to have that kind of playoff run, and then for them to be like, well, we got to draft Daniel Graham, sign Fourier and Cleland. Like, they cleaned house on tight end after they won the Super Bowl. Like, it's kind of an odd thing.
And does it make you wonder why?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, they obviously were enamored, and Wiggy will always say this, with the guys that were like 6'5 and just sort of looked more like the prototype. Like Daniel Graham. And Daniel Graham was a really good college tight end. I think he was like the John Mackey winner or whatever. But it just never really translated in the NFL. And so I guess they just wanted those guys. I mean, they were constantly drafting tight ends. Even in 01, actually, because I was talking with Wiggy off the air yesterday. Even in 01, they drafted two tight ends. They had a fourth rounder and a sixth rounder. And nobody's ever heard of either one. One of them never played in the league. And one of them, I think Wiggy said, went on IR and then ended up playing for like another team for like 2 years. But they were always so desperate for tight ends. They love tight ends. Think about it. They've drafted more first-round tight ends than wide receivers in the last 20 years. And yet, that's what I get. Again, you go back to this year and just how insane it was to have maybe the worst tight... Well, no, not maybe. They had the worst tight end.
No, as you pointed out, we had better tight ends.
Clearly better tight, like without question, better tight ends. And yeah, that was just, that was really odd.
Now, I know that, you know, we sort of played with this. We put it out on Twitter, everybody's lists of their top five. And Christian was included because he joined us as well.
Yeah.
Three of us had Gronk as the best tight end in Patriots history.
Yep.
One had Jermaine Wiggins as the best tight end in Brady's tenure.
In Brady's tenure. Right.
So one of us had Wiggins. The other three of us had Gronk.
Right.
Do you think the one who had Wiggins might have been out there a little bit?
Considering it was Wiggins, I don't think it's
not all. Pass is dropped by Jermaine Wiggins, the tight end.
So, now, he did have Gronk, too.
He did. He was able to put him, so he was able to see that and put him at two. And so that was it was almost unanimous. But
and I'll also say this, as silly as I thought, you know, Wiggins not having Gronk number one, the fact that Fourier didn't have Hernandez as one of his top five, I thought was also silly.
Fourier and Wiggy.
And again, you and I stressed, we're just talking football.
Well, of course
here.
We are.
We're not talking about human beings or anything like that. Just as a football player on the Patriots during Brady's career, I don't know how both of them left Hernandez off.
Well, I know how, because first of all, Wiggy and Fourier.
Because Wiggy wanted Wiggy. But.
Well, Wiggy and Fourier, Wiggy was also on Fourier's and he was on mine. And so Wiggy and Fourier like put each other on their list because that's cute. And then Fourier put all the guys, besides Gronk, guys that he played with. So he played with Graham. He played with Watson. And so that's why he put those guys on there.
In fact, there were only two guys who were on all four lists. Gronk.
Oh, and Fourier.
And Fourier.
Yeah.
Were the only two guys who were on all four lists.
Yeah, because it's an interesting group when you consider you have the one all-pro Hall of Famer. And then after that, you have, like, kind of guys that have you know, kind of similar production here or there. Guys that were on one Super Bowl team. You know, Fourier obviously was on two. Graham was on two. But then guys like Bennett and Wiggy were each on one. Watson was on one, although he wasn't really a big part of that one. And so it was pretty much seven guys, I think. Because then after that, you're really just getting into, like, the blocking tight ends and, like, you know, the Kyle Bradys and the Rod Rutledges and those types of guys. But I know some people thought Mike Vrabel should get thrown in there just because of his production on the goal line.
That would have been
but...
a smart aleck thing to do. I mean, it was eight really, really spectacular, you know, touchdown catches, but it was eight.
It was eight. Well, no, and if you count playoffs, he had the Super Bowl touchdowns, which Fourier... didn't, but still, it's been a pretty. It was a good group, and it was Brady again until last year. Always had at least one of those guys on his roster, like all the guys that we were talking about. And then last year, all of a sudden, you take them all away, and there's nobody that would even be. I guess Watson was on the team, but again, it was back nine, end of the ropes. Ben Watson,
and Watson was on one of my lists. By the way, he was on my list. He wasn't on yours.
He was not. No.
He was on. Christian's list and my list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just thought, again, he was drafted in the first round, and so was Daniel Graham, but I just never thought they lived up to it. Like, they were both pros, so by no means were they a bust, but I never was confident. When Brady threw to Watson, I was like, is he going to drop it? Like, or is he going to come up with a play? He just didn't. He had poor hands, and I just liked the other guy. The other guys I thought made more of an impact when they played.
A lot of folks weighed in on Twitter about which of the four lists they most agreed with. Some people, I'm looking at Chris right here on Twitter, says Keefe is right on target.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't remember, 1 to 5, you had Gronk, Hernandez, Fourier, Martellus Bennett, and then Jermaine Wiggins, number 5.
Yep.
A lot of people liked your list.
Yeah, and again, Bennett and Wiggins, both only with Brady for 1 year, but they made the most of it, and they both won Super Bowls. And the reason why I had Bennett on mine was...
That's why I didn't include them, by the way, on mine, just because each had 1 year.
But I thought, again, Wiggy's snowball game is as memorable as any non-Gronk tight end performance. So, and that game was so pivotal. And then his catch to set up the game-winning field goal in the Super Bowl against the Rams. That's why I have him on my list. And then with Bennett, you know, when Gronk goes down, you're thinking, all right, they're screwed. Right? Like, how many people thought no Gronk, no Super Bowl? And not that Bennett was the number one receiver. They still had Edelman. But now Bennett becomes the number one tight end. He had really good regular season numbers. He had, I think, 5 catches in that Super Bowl comeback against the Falcons. So I thought for 1 year, I guess 1+ because he came back. But really for the 1 year that Bennett was here, earned a spot on my list. And then Fourier obviously was a part of 2 Super Bowls. And then the other 2 guys, I think, are, to me, no-brainers.
When we come back in just a couple of minutes, our Brady Week will continue with the guy who was the assistant director of player personnel when the Patriots drafted Tom Brady, went on to become the director of player personnel and eventually the vice president of player personnel. Scott Pioli will join us in just a couple of minutes. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is Scott Pioli, current analyst for CBS Sports for the NFL. Back in the year the Patriots drafted Tom Brady, he was the assistant director of player personnel. He went on to become the director of player personnel and the vice president of player personnel. Scott Pioli joins us right now. Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just in the interest of giving you some career advice, and Rich and I have talked about this, what I would go with the rest of your life is I'm the one who insisted the Patriots draft Tom Brady. I talked Bill Belichick into taking this guy in the 6th round.
I remember that.
Yes.
I remember that. I was in the room next door. Actually, I think I was serving you guys drinks and finger food, I believe, as that conversation was going on.
Needless to say, no one knew.
Right.
In the 6th round that you were drafting the greatest quarterback who ever lived.
Right. Right. No one did. I don't even know if we knew it after the first Super Bowl or even after the second Super Bowl. but things worked out really, really well for us, you know, and for him. It was very fortuitous because I think it was a group of people. It was a group of people that, you know, the timing was perfect for everyone. It was this total confluence of right place, right time, right relationships. You know, because Tommy was able to develop under, you know, what I believe to be the greatest head coach of all time, and also be exposed to, you know, an outstanding offensive coordinator, an outstanding quarterback coach, and, you know, the best ownership in the NFL. So it was this perfect confluence of people coming together, right place, right time.
Yeah, and it's impossible to know the answer to this, but if Drew Bledsoe never gets hurt, does Tom Brady ever get his opportunity here in New England?
Well, I think he would have. You know, and again, having been, you know, in meetings nonstop with Bill, with Ernie Adams, with Charlie Weiss, and the late Dick Rabine, you know, we were going into that season, that 2001 season, we saw a player who made significant progress, but also we knew that we had this situation that was different and not too dissimilar, you know, than what we had been through in Cleveland, where, you know, Bernie Kosar, you know, his career trajectory was changing when it was there. At that point in time, we weren't sure who the quarterback was going to be. We acquired Vinny Testaverde, but we felt that Tommy had made enough progress and that he was going to be a player that was really going to be the future for us. And, you know, people could say, they didn't know that. But, you know, I go back to the 2000 season, and one of the, you know, it's listening to people give their recollection of what the facts were and what happened. You know, remember in 2000, there was a point in time, guys, where we had on our 53-man roster, we had cut all the way down to 51 players, right? And we'd also had on our, I think it was an 8-man practice squad was allowed at that point in time, we had either 6 or 7. So we didn't even have the full 53 players, but we kept 4 quarterbacks on that roster, right? We had Drew Bledsoe, we had John Freeze, and we had Michael Bishop and Tom Brady. And at that point in time, even now, rarely do teams keep more than 2 quarterbacks on their roster. Some carry through 3, a couple here there, or they carry their 3rd on the practice squad. We kept 4 quarterbacks on the roster because we really believed in a very short time that we had something with Tom.
We're talking with CBS Sports NFL analyst and longtime NFL personnel director and general manager Scott Pioli. You mentioned the late, great Dick Raybine. He was quarterback coach for the Patriots the year that Tom Brady was drafted. How much credit does he get for the Patriots selecting Brady in the 6th round?
I would say as much as any of us because, again, what happened was we had an evaluation on the player, you know, through the scouts, through the scouting department. Again, there was also, again, if you go back to that point in time, there was a transition happening, right, in the personnel department. I was the only new person that was brought into the personnel department. The staff was in place. Bobby Greer was I believe he had the title of general manager still at that time, and there was an entire scouting staff in place, yet there was this coaching staff that came in, and I was the one personnel, the new person in the personnel department. So what we ended up doing was, you know, we had some of our coaches go out on the road and do some private workouts. Now, we spent time with Tommy. We saw him play in the East-West game. We saw him at the Combine. We spent extra time with him. And Dick's time spent with him was an important part of the evaluation as we also evaluated the player on tape. I was actually fortunate enough to see Brady play in 99, his senior year. I had seen him in that fall previously up at Syracuse when I was up doing an advanced scout at the Buffalo Bills. What I would do every once in a while is go to a game on a Saturday when I was with the Jets. So I went to the Syracuse-Michigan game, saw him play. It wasn't anything spectacular, but this was truly one of those picks that ended up being the way the draft pick should be, which was a total collaborative effort. Now, the other thing I'll say is Dick did a tremendous job being his coach during the 2000 season and even into the beginning of 2001, which before, you know, his unfortunate passing during training camp in 2001 was a horrible thing.
Now, it sounds like you probably, as a team, would have already been moving on and Brady would have had the job to start 2002. But had you lost to the Raiders in the divisional round at home, had Vinatieri not made those kicks or whatever it was, if you lost in that round, do you think Brady's still the starter week 1 in 02?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I definitely think so. He had done enough that year as, again, a first-time player. He had certainly done enough to prove that he was capable of being the future of the organization.
Now, you mentioned that even with the first Super Bowl championship, or perhaps even with the second, you still didn't know that Tom Brady was, you know, destined to be the greatest quarterback who ever lived. Before you left the Patriots, after the 2008 season, there had to have been that aha moment. When do you think it happened for you?
Meaning, what the aha moment of knowing how great he was?
Yes.
I mean, when I left in 08, I felt, again, part of that was I could not be objective. I felt that he was the best quarterback in the NFL. I know there was always that argument between who was better, him or Peyton Manning. Again, I always believed it was Tommy. You know, I always chose Tommy for a lot of reasons. Again, because not only was he or is he a great player, he had this other element that I don't know I've seen any other player do. You're talking about a player who, throughout his entire 20-year career with the Patriots, took less money to make sure that the rest of the team was better. And I'm not saying that is by no means to be derogatory towards Peyton Manning at all, because I don't begrudge any player that ever wants more money. But the fact that he consciously did that every single contract, it made him a better player, but he also, more importantly, knew that it was going to make his team better. So, in terms of him being the best, I always thought he was the best when we were with him. The aha moment of when I felt he was the greatest, probably when he punched me between the eyes when I was with the Falcons and we were up 28-3
in the Super Bowl. Yeah, that would do it.
Oh my gosh. I was hoping you guys weren't going to bring me there, but I guess I just brought myself there.
Yep, you did.
But, quick story. I'll never forget, and it's still, I'm laughing about it, but it really, I'm laughing over frustration. At halftime of that game when we were up, I was in the booth with a number of people from the Falcons, the high-ranking scouts and some other high-ranking front office people, and we had this little suite. And at halftime, I was a wreck, like I am in every game. And some of the people were celebrating, and someone made the mistake of saying to me, "Scott, lighten up, relax.
Oh, boy.
We're up."
Oh, no.
And they were kind of, having a lot of fun and enjoying themselves. And something inside me snapped. Again, because I come from the culture. I was raised in the culture with Bill and Coach McPherson, where it's never over. And I remember turning around looking at the group of guys that were kind of yucking it up, enjoying it. And, I won't say the word that I said because I'm not a big cursor, but I turned around and looked at him at that moment and said, "You effing people don't get it. That son of a gun on the other sideline wearing number 12 is Freddy Krueger, and he's coming back. It's just a matter of how many of us he's going to kill and if it makes it back all the way."
You were,
and sure enough, I mean, I can't believe, I feel like you guys are this is like therapy for me, but that's when I knew that he was the greatest of all time.
Now, you weren't in the box when Arthur Blank said, "You know what, I'm going to go down to the field," were you?
No.
Okay.
No, I was never in the box.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I never did, even as, in my time in New England, and my years as a Kansas City GM and as the assistant GM at the Falcons, I never was in that, was in a booth with the owner. It was just, I felt like there was always work to be done. And, so I always worked. But I'm going to share this too, all right, because I'm going to give this guy up. At halftime, I also got a text from a former Patriot who's a dear, dear friend of mine, Rodney Harrison, who texted me, and Erica and I are leaving. I can't take this anymore. Congrats.
Wow.
That son of a gun. And I said, that was a kiss of death.
Rodney
sure enough,
left
Bill
the Super
coached
Bowl.
The heck out of those guys. And people, you think about what they did that day between Bill keeping the team mentally and emotionally in it, right, because that was the culture that he's established, and then to have the quarterback and the rest of the players, it's pretty amazing, unfortunately.
As a longtime NFL GM and director of player personnel, and try to be dispassionate about this, is he going to succeed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I don't know. I don't, and again, I know that's not an answer. Yes, I don't think it's a yes or no answer because I really don't feel convicted either way. Because a lot will depend on, how good is the defense? How good are the players around him? And I don't think, he's not part of what Tommy did in New England was because he always took less so he could have more with him. On the other 52 spots, those other 52 spots and the coaching are going to make a big difference. And I don't think I have an answer. I don't know yes or no.
So
I really don't.
You obviously know that division very well with a number of years with the Falcons. If you are Atlanta or New Orleans or Carolina, are you looking at Tampa Bay and said, "Oh crap, like they just got a whole lot better," or is it a lot like what you're saying, a lot more of the uncertainty?
Here's what I know. I know they got better by, talent-wise, by bringing Tommy in. Because when you compare Tommy to Jameis Winston, it's going to be, by not having Jameis, it's automatically addition by subtraction for Tampa Bay, right? They're going to have 30 less interceptions and a multiple amount of fewer pick sixes.
Right.
So now you're better that way. Then you improve by bringing in still a guy that I still think is one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, regardless of how old he is. Now, again, it's how they build the rest of the team. They are a better football team. But you know what? There's a pretty good quarterback here in Atlanta. There's a pretty good quarterback down in New Orleans. It's going to be an interesting division. It really is. But I think the addition of Tommy, here's the other place that they're better. Culturally, and from a dependability standpoint, and from an accountability standpoint, they just got better exponentially.
Scott, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us. I hope I get to see you at a Bruins game again soon.
Oh, that was a good, well, it was a great night. It wasn't a good game. That was so, my brother was so angry. He was so angry after that loss.
I'll talk to you again soon, Scott. Thank you.
Again too. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks. That is Scott Pioli, CBS Sports NFL analyst, former director of player personnel and GM in the National Football League. And it's kind of interesting listening to him talk about what it was like. He thinks Brady would have been the quarterback no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he was in the rooms. He was
right,
in the meetings.
Right.
He was there.
But it's still a matter of when, right? Because week one, it was Bledsoe. Week two, it was Bledsoe. And then he gets hurt. So would it have been week three? Would it have been week four? And then how much, like, is Brady, when he's playing against the Raiders in the divisional round in the snow game, he had already had 14 starts. So, like, all of that helps, and he's more prepared for that playoff run than, say, he took over in week 10 or week 12. Or, like, there's still so much unknown. Like, clearly those guys valued him. It goes back to keeping four quarterbacks. He's right. Nobody does that.
Unheard of.
Four quarterbacks.
No one,
like,
does
that.
What
are we doing? And then for him to go from...
So they didn't know he was the best of all time.
No.
But they knew they had something.
They knew he was good. But and Belichick had a track record of making tough decisions with a quarterback and taking, you know, you can easily say Bernie Kosar, Drew Bledsoe, you know, what they meant to their franchises and everything else. And then you could swap those guys out. If he's willing to do that, maybe he would. I just wonder about, what would the timing look like? You're like, when would that have happened? If all of a sudden, you know, Bledsoe wins weeks 3, 4, and 5, and they're 3-2, kind of hard to pull them after a winning streak, you know? So I think there's just so much uncertainty. And then the first thing that Scott said was it was almost just like a perfect storm of everything. Like, one, when they drafted him, one, when he got the opportunity, the head coach that was there, the quarterback coach, the coordinator. It was like everything just fell into place for him.
Before we take a break, we want to make sure everyone gets an opportunity to enter the code word for a chance to win an autographed Tom Brady jersey, because it is Tom Brady week here on WEEI to benefit the Restaurant Strong Fund. Help support those in the service industry who've been financially burdened because of COVID-19 by visiting restaurantstrong.org. So right now, visit weei.com/jersey. Enter the code word champion for a chance to win an autographed Brady Patriots jersey. Again, that's code word champion to weei.com/jersey for your chance to win. It's all brought to you by Sam Adams, celebrating Brady's 20 years in New England. And one of you out there is going to win this thing. I hope it's you. We want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.